The GAA Podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
Now, delighted to say we have in studio a man with 5 All-Irelands, 3 National Leagues, 4 All-Stars, former Young Footballer of the Year, also Senior Footballer of the Year, Man of the Match in 2 All-Ireland Finals, took a year out to travel Africa and further his studies. He's a doctor at Temple Street Hospital. He's still only 26 years of age. Jack McCaffrey, where did it all go wrong?
Well, thank you very much for having me in.
Thanks for coming in. No, it's great to have you in. So, how's life?
Life is good, yeah. Life's good. Just kind of getting back to normality after Christmas. Had a nice bit of downtime, chilling at home and kind of getting back into work and slowly starting to think about football again too. So, yeah, things are starting to come back to regular life.
Should you not be in Bali?
Should I not be in Bali? No, the lads are just finishing up the team holiday over there now at the moment. I have an exam coming up that I have to do for work, and it just, the timings didn't fall particularly well for me. I was over there with Paul Mannion not too long ago, so I've got my Bali fix for this off-season. I'm happy enough.
When's the exam?
22nd of January.
What have we got?
It's just as part of the kind of 2-year training scheme I'm on, you have to do 3 exams over the course of 2 years, so this is the first of the 3, and hopefully hit the ground running and it all goes well. We'll see.
So, to reflect briefly on the year that was, I guess, because we haven't had Jane or a chance to talk about it, the 5 in a row thing, when you look back on it now, was that a pressure across the year?
No. It's the question that keeps getting asked now is if people expect that we were kind of keeping something wrapped up and now that it's done, we'll all come out in the open. I've spoken about it before. We mentioned it at the start of the year because we're all adults, we're all relatively intelligent, there's no point hiding away from something like that. It kind of, Jim just brought it into the room, said, this is going to be in the conversation as the year goes on. Let people talk about it. Does anyone here have any strong feelings about it? Either way, it's done now. Let's just go about trying to win the All-Ireland. In the aftermath of the All-Ireland, it probably came into play a bit more for us all again. It just added a certain unique and even more special aspect to the win. But in the lead up to it, I can honestly say it wasn't a factor for me. I can only really speak for myself, but I like to think that's the same for most lads.
And when you say afterwards it took an extra resonance, what jumps to mind? What images or memories or moments?
So for me, it's probably the immediate aftermath, really, and Croke Park and wandering around there. It just seemed like the energy you were getting from the fans that were left there and who stayed behind for a very long time was just a little bit different, and you saw very emotional men and women who you know, probably could appreciate what we were doing a bit more. While you're trying to win in All-Ireland, you're probably so focused on doing it that you don't take in all the context around it, maybe. Mm. Whereas I'm sure a lot of the fans had really taken to heart exactly kind of what it would mean and what was on the line. And to see the kind of release that they had, and then you kind of reflect that back as well. And that's the kind of abiding memory for me. Afterwards, we're kind of with our family and friends and you get your prolonged celebrations, but that was kind of a really special half hour to an hour.
I can imagine. Difficult to describe probably in many ways.
Yeah, it is. And I don't do it justice probably, but it was just, look, you had to be dragged off the pitch kind of thing. And sometimes you really want to get back and meet your family and meet your friends and get on with the night as quickly as possible. But that day it was just, you were trying to soak in everything. It was really one of a kind.
Mm, I'm sure. Because I didn't realise until relatively recently, I don't know how it passed me by, that your dad had won an All-Star and played in an All-Ireland final for Dublin. Mm. He's there up in the stand watching all this as well, with probably an extra understanding of what you're going through to a point.
To a point, yeah, definitely. Yeah, Dad played for a couple of years with Dublin, and unfortunately they lost the final to Kerry while he was playing, and he has won an All-Star, all right. It's actually in pieces at home. I broke it when I was about 3 years old. I knocked it off a shelf, so I'm still getting slagged about that. But I suppose he never tries to kind of live through me or anything like that. But it definitely, when I started playing with Dublin anyway, it was nice to have a kind of sounding board in the house who, apart from being my father and obviously a confidant in that way, was also someone who'd been through the mill himself and had a bit of an understanding of what was involved. So he's always been very good that way and someone I rely an awful lot on.
When you talk about trying to almost stay away a little bit from the hype and the build-up to a game and maybe you almost engage with that a bit more at full-time, how good are you at doing that? Because you're out and you're working in the real world and you're meeting real people, and I'm sure every patient who can and has an interest is asking you how you're going to go at the weekend. So the smiling assassin that we see in the parade, which has now become a thing, as a I suspect you're aware, yeah. What's he like on a Thursday and a Friday before a game?
Yeah, so it definitely is a challenge, and it certainly was a challenge when I started playing with Dublin. You don't really realise until your first one how much an All-Ireland final just takes over your life, and the energy you expend trying not to think about a game can be quite counterproductive. So I suppose over the years I've learned that I'm always kind of happy to talk football with people who come up to me. In the lead-up to a final, it's bizarre. People just kind of think they own you, and you're walking along the street and you just get grabbed by the collar, and no one introduces themselves. They're just like, well, what's the story? What's happening? Who's... And you kind of... It can be a bit shocking, but you develop kind of just little techniques, and unfortunately you end up just trotting out the same old cliches. And I've gotten...
Your small talk is good, I'd say.
Small talk's good. The key is not to stop walking whatever direction you're going. Just kind of slow down a little bit, but keep moving at all times. And there are polite ways to tell people that you don't want to speak to them.
Yes. And has it taken a toll? Like, have you got better at it? Have there been occasions where actually you rocked up the day of a final and thought, I'm a little bit drained here actually from this week?
There are. Yeah, actually, you know what? The probably easiest juxtaposition I would have is the two finals this year, because they fell so close together.
Yeah.
And the first one, I kind of did my usual thing and chatted away to people while it was all kind of over the head. And then... for the replay, I probably wasn't quite as good as I had been at that. There was just a lot more focus on me personally, given I'd played quite well in the first game. Mm. And probably something I wasn't quite used to. Probably mentally, subconsciously, you were planning on just switching off then, and you'd kind of thought that this was not football time. And I probably let my guard slip a little bit there.
So what does that mean, let your guard slip?
So it just probably means that you find yourself not giving out the normal cliches, having a proper conversation with football nearly 24/7 for 2 weeks, and then turning up to a match, and you know, some of the energy you've spent chit-chatting to somebody about a game maybe could have been better spent thinking about the actual match itself in a proper player's way, kind of what might I do differently, what kind of different challenges I might face. And I just didn't quite feel as on the money going into the second game, but
interesting.
All's well that ends well.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting lesson. I guess you must spend quite a lot of your life, certainly in mid-season, being very acutely aware of your energy levels, psychologically, mentally, emotionally, physically, almost taking a regular stock take across a week.
You know, you do and you don't. I suppose, from one perspective, like, I'm 26 years old. During last year's season, I was 25. I'm kind of at the peak of my physical powers, or getting there. You're not overly worried. Like, a long day in work shouldn't really have a massive impact on your physical performance, but definitely I've become a bit more aware of the psychological and mental side of things, because I would have previously just said, not that it's nonsense, but you know, it didn't bother me and I can just turn up and it's fine and we'll get going. Whereas now you realise that, you know what, if you have had a tough day in work and you've just been on the go all day and hadn't had a chance to take stock of yourself, and then you run into training maybe 15 minutes later than you usually would be, and you're scrambling to get ready, and then you're just thrown into it, you just don't get the same kind of return. So what I've found is just kind of being honest with yourself, and even if you have to say it to the management, I just need kind of 5-10 minutes here to reset, or finding somewhere to take a break, even if it means that you arrive a bit later and people are like, God, you're cutting it quite close, at least you're arriving in the right frame of mind as opposed to just rushing through everything. So
they're okay with that, they understand.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, like, look, you're not late for training. I suppose I usually would arrive at Dublin training an hour or more before training starts, as would most lads.
Right.
Whereas it might be a case of arriving half an hour before training starts, which is actually kind of being late in the eyes of most of us. But you might get a bit of slagging from somebody, but nobody's going to, you know, everyone has a life as well, so no one's going to take it seriously.
Is the smiling in the parade thing, has this gotten a bit too big for you?
Yeah, a bit, yeah.
Do I smile? Do I not smile?
That's the thing. Like, the whole smiling in the parade thing isn't a thing. What I've found has worked for me in football and in life in general is just kind of being relaxed and enjoying myself as much as I can. Mm. And I've always really enjoyed that kind of lull between a pretty intense build-up to a final and a warm-up and the actual ball being thrown in. I found that little lull to be a nice time to take a step back and just take a deep breath and chill out. Mm. what that usually means to me is I kind of start smiling because I appreciate where I am and I'm enjoying it. Whereas again, to go back to that kind of drawn game, there was probably a huge deal made out of the fact that some camera caught me smiling, and like they've caught me smiling before and I haven't performed particularly well, and there's no comment made, but then you have one good game and suddenly it's a bit of a thing that people latch onto. And so kind of counterproductively, it nearly felt like, oh crap, I better smile going around here, and suddenly you're nervous about smiling, and it's the whole...
Am I smiling too much?
Yeah, it's the antithesis of what it's meant to be, really, yeah. So...
It's meant to be almost a private moment.
Well, it's just like, if I relax out there and, you know, I'm not feeling particularly smiley, that's fine.
Yeah.
Once I'm cool, calm and collected type thing. As opposed to, I just don't want to force anything either way.
Yes, no, I understand.
So that's kind of where I've
landed. You can come up with a new thing for the new season.
I'll figure it out.
When you score 1-3 in an All-Ireland final and you play as well as you did, it must be just a joyous experience. And it looked like you felt like everything was motoring well. And even watching some of the scores again, the point you popped over with your left foot.
Yeah, that won't happen again.
The casual ease with which you did that. And then the goal, where you take off so early and you just head down sprint for a huge proportion of that move. Can you remember what you were thinking as you were sprinting in that moment? Because it's such an incredible goal.
No, not really. No. There was kind of a... We knew that Kerry were pushing up on us, and so we knew that if we could win primary possession around the middle third, there would be something on.
Yes.
So that was kind of the overarching kind of mindset. But no, it's too hectic. You don't have time to think, really, which is probably for the best in those kind of situations. In terms of the performance, yeah, it's a funny one because there's no point lying about it. I was absolutely delighted with how it went, but then we've drawn and there's a replay coming up, so you're kind of, you can't be patting yourself on the back either, and there's no point thinking, oh Jesus, didn't I do great, because you know you have to go out and do it again. So that was another thing that was a bit unique about this year, the end of this year.
There must have been a period in that first game where you thought, this thing is looking less and less likely by the moment here. We are up against it. It seemed like, as a team, you didn't lose your cool. Panic didn't set in.
And there's great credit due to a lot of people for that. But I never thought we were going to lose until Cormac's point was ruled off by Hawkeye. It was adjudged to have touched the post or whatever. I think that was somewhere in the 71st minute maybe. And I remember kind of thinking, God, that doesn't really happen us, and it has, and then you kind of glance at the scoreboard and not a long time left, and we were a point down at that point, and that was the only time I kind of got a bit of a jolt and said, geez, this might not work out. And from that point on, the lads were phenomenal, and like, I find it difficult to describe how proud I am watching the last 10 minutes of that game of us as a team, because the turnovers that some of the guys put in and the work rate, and seeing Klucko come up to mark somebody and Kev Mack getting turnovers in around the middle third, and everybody just kind of basically saying, okay, we should lose today, but we are refusing to. And
maybe their finest 10 minutes in some ways, because of the level of adversity and the pressure.
You
don't need to rank the 10 minutes.
That's kind of a difficult one to do, but it was just, for all the kind of good football we play and good footballers we have, that was just sheer resilience and character, and I'm delighted that we got to show everybody that we have it in spades.
Jim Gavin's departure took you totally by surprise?
Yeah, I'm one of those that it did. I think most of us were taken by surprise.
He'd left it a while, certainly on the outside. I thought, well, it had gone past a certain point where he was going to announce it.
Yeah, he had, I suppose. For him and for Declan and for Jason, it's a huge decision to make on a personal level, and I just think they took their time until they were 100% sure that it was the way they wanted to go. And once they did, they, as they always have been with us, were completely honest and upfront and just let us know. So it was an interesting couple of days, and I suppose initially you were quite sad, and then...
Did you get emotional?
Yeah, I would have. Well, you know, outside of my immediate family, for the last 7 years, they've been the most important people in my life, which is a bit sad to admit, but it was certainly an emotional day or two. We kind of met up for a few drinks that night and swapped stories a bit, and then there was probably 48 hours of that, and it very quickly kind of galvanized us as a group a bit, I think, okay. to look towards next year. And it certainly kind of started the excitement ticking a little bit earlier than it might otherwise have. So while that was a challenging time for us, I think it's kind of set us up, well, I hope it's kind of set us up really well for next year, and kind of really giving it a good go under Desi.
And what kind of relationship did you have with Jim? Would he have been somebody, for instance, who would have routinely given you a phone call for a chat away from training, or was it close in that way, or was it pretty much almost, I don't want to say business-like, but, you know, I see you training, I see you matches, and that's kind of our relationship?
No, so you could always pick up the phone, and I would have received phone calls as well, but not in a kind of any kind of regular way. I would count him as a friend, but I think that when you are managing a football team, it is incumbent upon you to keep a little bit of a buffer between yourself and players. So there was the door is always open policy, and there was kind of joking and chatting away, but there was very much a sense that, you know, Jim might at some point make a decision that I don't want him to make,
yes.
And he's the manager, and we go with it. So there was no kind of blurring of those lines anyway.
Yeah, I guess that's important. Like, in terms of, he's obviously shaped, I guess, most of you guys in many respects and how you approach your inter-county life. Would you have gone, you know, could you have gone 2, 3, 4 games without much feedback from him very easily? Or was every game met with detailed feedback on your performance?
Jesus, I have to think. I suppose, no, you definitely could have gone through a couple of games, maybe in the league anyway, with a very general, like, this, we all know what you're working towards and what you have to work on, and it's not an overnight fix type thing, and just keep moving along. And if you ever wanted feedback, it was there and readily available.
Right.
But then during the kind of latter stages of the season, and certainly into the championship, you would get very detailed feedback, and it would, as much as you wanted, you would get, like, he would have everything available.
Any example of something that
The only other thing is that it didn't necessarily always come from Jim. The management kind of split things up, and there were defensive coaches and attacking coaches and whatnot. Any specific examples? Not particularly, to be honest. Usually it would be, well, for myself, it would kind of be a particular situation in a game, and were you happy with how you did that, and what about this, and would you consider that? And it was more, it was never really you did something wrong and this is what you should do. It was more challenging your thought process at a certain point and maybe giving you a different perspective on it. So that was kind of the general gist of things. I don't have any specifics offhand.
That's interesting, even that it's more of a conversation. Although I take it that when they sit down and they say to you, were you happy with this moment? The answer is not yes.
Is, well, sometimes you'd fight it just to see what happened. But I'd imagine we usually ended up reaching the conclusions that they wanted us to reach.
I would have thought so. So where does work fit into all of this now? You're missing the team holiday, that's unfortunate, and you've got your exam. Did you say you're in the midst of a two-year?
A two-year job, yeah. So
are you fully qualified at the end of that?
So it's a funny one. I'm fully qualified as a doctor, and I'm now training in the pediatric, it's called the basic specialty training, and that's a two-year job, which is 4 6-month rotations. And then at the end of that, you can either attempt to get onto a 5-year training course at a higher level straight away, or you can maybe take a year to do a bit of research or explore different jobs before going into that. But ultimately, you have to do the 2-year course, the 5-year course, and at the end of that, technically, you could be going for consultant jobs. But in reality, you probably need to spend a couple of years either abroad or doing a bit of research and other bits and bobs to... Okay. Pad the CV a little bit.
I mean, it's arduous training. Do you know what you're going to do at the end of
working,
the 2 years?
I suppose
so you are. Yeah.
It's not. Yeah, it's not like we're constantly training. It's going out and getting experience.
Do you know what you're going to do at the end of the 2 years?
No. I'm kind of locked in till July 2021 with this current job, and then I'll have to have a little think about. Well, shortly before then, I'll have to have a little think about what comes next.
Yeah, you're at Temple Street.
Temple Street actually finished on Friday, and then I'm heading down to Kilkenny for 6 months.
Okay.
So that'll be good fun. Looking forward to getting down there.
And what's Temple Street been like?
It is phenomenal. it's been a really, really special place to work. It's kind of somewhere I was very familiar with growing up in Dublin and being an active kid and picking up bangs and bruises and then going to school in Belvedere. We were just across the road. So Temple Street was kind of always in the background of my life growing up. And then to work there, I don't know if you've ever been in, I hope you haven't, but it is a, like, it's essentially three or four houses that have been repurposed into a hospital. It is in no way, shape or form, it was not meant for what it currently is doing, but the character in the place and the work ethic of the staff just across the board and the attitude and the kind of happiness they bring to the table to create a nice environment for kids to kind of recuperate and get better is incredible. And in terms of kind of forming a culture and getting a good team ethic in place, I couldn't have asked for a better place to learn. So it's been a really phenomenal 6 months, and it flew in. It was a really, really quick one.
And day to day, does it become difficult spending time around sick children? And I'm sure there's some dark days where bad news happens or death happens, frankly, and you're able to cope with that. Is that a routine thing?
Thankfully not a routine thing, no. It's really, really enjoyable by and large. And yeah, there are days that aren't, unfortunately, nice to be a part of. But, you know, it's important to remember that if you weren't there, that these bad things are happening anyway. Yes. You know, it's not the case that it would just not exist if you kind of turned a blind eye.
Is there counselling available? Do you go and talk to people after bad days? Or if you're feeling, I don't want to put feelings like guilty, I could have done more there, or, you know, we could have had a better outcome there. Do you talk to people when stuff like that happens?
Yeah, well, I suppose the first thing to flag is that I'm at a pretty early stage in my career, and I'd be very well insulated from probably the key decision making in obviously life or death instances, or frankly making any of the vital decisions around management. But there's a very informal network, first of all, of people who keep an eye out on each other in terms of your colleagues. Everyone kind of understands what people are doing, and by and large most people would have gone through most situations, so there is that. And I think, thankfully, I haven't had to avail of anything like that, but I do think that if you're involved in a particularly bad case, there are supports available and recommended that you avail of. But fortunately, I've not come into that yet.
Yeah, good. I guess you get to make friends with a lot of the patients who are there long term as well.
Yeah, we've a couple of long termers, and I suppose Christmas there was cool in that the staff again in there just move heaven and earth to get anyone home who can possibly get home. And I suppose those that are left there, unfortunately, are there because they just have to be in hospital to be managed. But there's a really nice atmosphere, and yeah, as you correctly mentioned, there are a couple of kind of local celebrities who have been there for donkey's years and who are kind of a part of the furniture now, and some of whom are kind of moving towards home soon, which is also very exciting. Yeah. So it's great, and you'll find that there are one or two patients around the place who everyone knows, and even though you've no business to, you'll just make your way by their room at some point and pop the head in and have a chat. And it's a part of what makes it a really nice place to work.
Do you get a sense of fulfillment from that? I think a lot of people maybe in their jobs do wonder, geez, what's the value on a day-to-day basis? And the one they'll quote is, God, like a doctor off saving lives. Do you get that sense of fulfillment from it?
Yeah, well, yes, to be honest. Not every day. Again, I cannot stress enough, because I'll just get slagged in work if people think I'm making it look like I run the show.
I understand.
There's very much a chain of command, and I'm quite at the bottom of it. But there are certainly days that you walk away and go, you know what? And it's probably the night shifts and stuff when you're not doing your regular 9-to-5 and you're on call and you have to help out and kind of in more maybe emergency situations, that you feel, you know, I was pretty good today, and I helped out, and what I did made a difference, and that's really nice. You always kind of leave with a bit of a smile on your face.
Yeah, I can imagine. Those moments are huge. And what, do you have a long-term aim yet? Do you know where you want to be in 20 years with it all?
No. So one of the good things about paediatrics, one of the many good things, is that you do train quite generally initially, and then as you kind of come towards the end of it, start picking a special interest, or you can work as a generalist. So I'm not sure. I love the hospital environment. I really like working there. So I'd certainly like to stay in hospital medicine, and where exactly that is, I don't know. I'll figure it out at
some
stage.
How compatible is it with Dublin football at the moment? And is it going to stay as compatible for hopefully the next 10 years of your life, give or take?
10 years? Jeez, I know.
You've got another 10 All-Irelands in you, surely.
Do not wish that. If I'm playing for Dublin in 10 years, you have permission to shoot me. It is currently fine. I suppose starting in Temple Street, we rotate in July and January every year. And starting in Temple Street was a bit tough, just in terms of you're meeting new colleagues, and frankly, you do need people to do you a favour, and in terms of swapping shifts, especially when you bloom and go and draw an All-Ireland final. That was when my co-SHOs, I have to say a big thank you to, but...
I'm sure you'd spent weeks saying, I promise you, once we get past this Sunday...
Yeah, exactly. And then it just keeps rolling. The only thing is that, I suppose, what's notoriously challenging is when you end up doing a shift in A&E and you're doing shift work, because while hospital medicine, you do call, by and large, you're kind of doing a 8 to 5, 9 to 6, whatever kind of job. So it's semi-regular. Whereas when you're in the emergency department, it's completely shift work. So that will bring its own challenges. But then look, you've inter-county footballers who are farmers who are up at the crack of dawn, out doing arduous physical work all day. You've every kind of career under the sun represented. So, you know, I don't think medicine brings its own little challenges. It can be done, it just takes a bit of doing.
Yeah. Why do I have permission to shoot you if you're still playing for Dublin 36? Would this not be fantastic? No?
I will have no hamstrings left. Look, I'm really enjoying football at the moment, but I can't see myself in 10 years still doing the same stuff I'm doing at the moment. Don't know where in the world I'll be.
I see, I read, I think it was in the Irish Independent website, you've signed Stephen Cluxton up for 2020.
I saw that, yeah, that was this morning. They were very quick to publish that one.
What did you say? You have a sense he will?
I don't know. They're very strange. He just asked me, was Stephen playing next year? And I was a bit taken aback because I didn't know that was being discussed even. So, again, I don't speak for other people, but my understanding is that he is ready to go. And wants to play again, so I'm open to correction. I'm sure he'll ring me this evening if I have that wrong.
That's
what I've gone to press with.
Desi Farrell, how well do you know him? Were you just past the group who came through?
So it was kind of my year. That's kind of the split. So from myself down, we'd all have kind of been coached or managed by Desi at some point, and from myself up, wouldn't have. So I know Desi really, really well. Obviously, I haven't played under him in 6 years. So it's been a while, and I'm sure he's changed a bit, no more than I have, but really excited to see what he brings to the table. I think he was absolutely the most logical and best choice for Dublin. I was just worried that he wouldn't be available, because I know he's a very busy man and it's a big commitment, but I'm delighted he's taken it up, and I suppose we haven't really started yet, so it's hard to comment on it, but I really hope it, and I feel like it will go very well.
I saw, look, with a view to 2020, the attacking marks coming in, and I know you were very critical of that when it was first announced. Have you softened in that stance, or are you dreading this as much as ever?
No, I do think it's terrible, but I suppose I've probably resolved that I should at least see it before continue to...
But your fear, sorry, I should have said, for people who didn't see your initial comments, was effectively this is just increasing the likelihood of a stop-start game, which is the antithesis of what we want.
Yeah, and I think, you know, since I've been involved with inter-county football, there have been a number of rule changes, and they've been kind of like where the kick-out is taken from, there's the black card, there has been the midfield mark. I don't think any of them kind of intrinsically changed the way football is played, to be honest. And I think this has the potential to, a little bit. Again, I've decided I will sit on my hands a bit until it either works or it doesn't, because I'm sure people laboured over it long and hard and lost sleep over whether it was a good idea. And I'm just coming in kind of with my instincts. But I don't know, I presume it's been brought in to counter a very defensive football, which I don't think we're seeing as much of anymore.
No.
And also, I think if you kind of logically work through this, it could actually have the exact opposite effect, in that you now have to mark a forward in a way that he cannot catch the ball clean, but you cannot overcommit because he'll turn you and score a goal. So probably the logical thing to do is to put someone in front of him and someone behind him. So look, we'll see what happens, and we're stuck with it for a little while anyway, so We'll give it a go.
It's unfortunate timing because I think the tide had turned on the style of football we were seeing, especially in the last year.
Too,
we were,
I mean,
even the way Cork went at you guys, I mean, it was a brilliant game. And
worried about them.
We're seeing more of that. We'll come back to you if 3 games into the Leinster Championship, you're repeatedly marked 6'6", lads. Who jogging over to you and saying, landed on me, lads.
I've already been targeted for high balls, so we'll have to see what happens. We'll be all right.
What would you change about Gaelic football? That aside, what would you change about the state of Gaelic football if you could make sweeping, easy changes?
I wouldn't change a whole pile about the sport. I suppose I'd love to play more for Clontarf than I currently do.
How often would you get out?
So, last year I picked up a few little niggles, in fairness, which is nobody's fault, but I'd say maybe on average you're talking maximum 4 league games and whatever championship games you're in. My club situation is a little bit different in that we're not kind of solid Division 1 team yet that are guaranteed to remain in Division 1 at all times. So it's very hard to see a world in which you can challenge for the Dublin Championship without being a kind of ever-present team in Division 1. So whereas other clubs are perfectly happy to have all their players available for championship, we kind of are in a slightly different phase,
okay,
as are a lot of clubs. So it's a bit annoying because you often hear people just say, well, they're available for championship. It's like, yeah, that's a bit short-sighted.
The structures of the season.
Yeah. Look, it is a very difficult kind of trying to serve 2 masters or 3 masters or whatever amount of masters there are, but it is... It's just important because it's kind of the foundation of everything. And while Clontarf, I know, are very proud to have me involved with the Dublin team and have supported me all the time, I'm sure they'd love to have me available to play a little bit more regularly too.
Yeah,
and
I'm sure they would. And plenty of clubs around the country are saying the same thing. So good luck with the exam, and you're probably back into Dublin training very, very soon. Whenever these lads come back from Bali, is that the gist of it?
That's the gist of it, yeah. Pretty much, well summarised.
Okay, well listen, thanks so much for coming in. And I should say Jack McCaffrey is the Dennis Manny Toyota brand ambassador. He's a driver of the Toyota CHR. And you can discover the range of new Toyota hybrids and 201 offers at Dennis Manny, Kilbarrack and M50. Jack McCaffrey, thanks a mil.
Thank you.
The GAA Podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.